everyone, it's Daphne here, and it feels like it's been a very long time since I've spoken to you via this podcast. So firstly, I'm glad to be here and thank you too for being here and having some patience. Today, we're going to hear from Karen. I thought it would be a good and fitting place to start this new season of podcasts with a follower-upper to Karen's story. You may remember in episode 58, we met Karen and her husband, Connor. They were thinking of a midlife move to the country. And in this episode, we find out that they have indeed moved to the country. And we talk to Karen as she tells us about her search and how it all worked out and where they are now. So Karen, I'm so grateful to her for taking the time to share her story. It's definitely going to be of interest to anyone who's half thinking about a move and who also has to negotiate and navigate the buying terrain with another person, e.g. a significant other or a spouse. So I hope you enjoy it, and then stay tuned for the following week when we'll be talking about all the ins and outs of the legalities and the just logistics of buying a country home. So thank you for listening. I'm glad to be back. So Karen, last seen as I was driving down to your current home, your country home, I listened to our last podcast, which is basically part one of this one. And in it, we discussed at the time you were living in Dublin, and when last seen, you were just about to put a for sale sign on your home in Dublin, and you were starting your search. And the only thing you'd put in your daft search was acres. And while you're open-minded as to where you might live, you had a preference for the W's, the Wicklows, the Waterfords and the Wexfords, because of family and connection. So tell me, and I thought, I'll just tell you what I thought you were going to buy. You were selling a Victorian house in Dublin 6. It was such an elegant city pad, beautifully done. And where I thought you'd end up buying in the country was a glebe or an old rectory or some kind of mini manor house with 15 acres or 20 acres. So describe where we're sitting here, Karen.
That's funny, Daphne, because that's exactly where I thought I'd end up. And it's not where I've ended up at all, really. So we're sitting in rural South Wexford.
Rural South Wexford.
Quite close to Kilmore Quay. If we had a view, it would be down to Duncormick and out to Kilmore. So I'm hoping the forestry that surrounds us at the moment is to come down in the next few years. So it's not an old house. It's less than 20 years old. It is what they say architect designed, and in this case it is architect designed. It's not what I set out to buy, and I suppose the story is how we got here and how I actually have quite difficulty learning to live in a new house. How to be in a new house is something that I've never done. I've never lived in a new house. I've lived in apartments when I was young, but we've always lived in old houses. I grew up in an old house, and the last two houses we've had in our marriage have been old houses. So I'm finding that quite a challenge, is how to be in a new house. So maybe we'll get onto that later, but how did we get here?
Well, I just want to say I totally share that idea of finding it hard to live in a new house, because I had exactly the same experience when I bought a house and we got married. We bought a modern house. But just to rewind the search, at the time when we spoke the first time, we were doing the kind of creating this launching pad and this delicate weave that happens when you've got one house that you need to sell and another house that you're looking forward to buying. You're hoping the finances work out. So firstly, how did you get on with the sale of your house in Dublin?
Well, that was easy. And that was a dream. We both loved the house we were selling in Dublin. So I think that came across in the house itself. And if I can put a plug in, we had an amazing estate agent.
Great. Do put a plug in for who?
Tracy Gilburn with Lisney's at the time, or Lisney Sotheby's now. She was amazing. I was away when Connor, my husband, basically interviewed a number of estate agents, and he came away saying, this is the woman for us. And she made it, it's not sort of trite to say she made it easy. She just has processes in place. She speaks clearly and plainly, and she knew to the penny what you're going to get. So the selling was easy, Brett.
Right.
And we got the money. We were very lucky, I think, at the time. The market was probably just at its peak then, so we got quite lucky. It wasn't a huge house. So we walked away with what we thought was a nice, sizable amount of money, and definitely something to buy in the country. So I suppose what happened then was I had one idea and my husband had another idea. He's an engineer, so he's very practical, and what he wants the house to work. And, you know, I want it to look a certain way and feel a certain way and work in a certain way, but he wants the functions to work. So we moved to North Wexford to a holiday home that the family had there, and that was to be for 6 weeks because we had found what I had thought was our dream home. Well, it was for me. It was, again, it wasn't what we thought it was going to be, Bethany. It wasn't the old Glebe house. And we had looked a lot of those. And every time we drove up the driveway, I'd go, oh, it's gorgeous. You know, and Connor would go, oh, it needs to be rewired. It needs a new roof. There's no outhouses. It needs to be plumbing. This, you know, the cistern doesn't work. This doesn't work. So we had found this beautiful house in North Wexford. It was a 1970s build, so it had a lot wrong with it. But anyhow, I was very much in love with it. It was very romantic. So it ticked the boxes in a lot of respects, but it didn't work out. It was all to do with rights of way.
Okay.
You know, so rights of way in the country are very, very important. So,
and I'll just add in there as something, if someone is thinking of buying a country house, there aren't a million issues that are likely to come up when you're buying, but one of them certainly is rights of way. And sometimes it can happen that the agent who's selling the property hasn't really had a decent conversation with the seller, and the agent themselves don't know about these rights of way. And it can be something that the buyer might be able to stomach if they hear about them early on. But if they're introduced at the last minute, it's a bit shocking.
Yeah, I think, and particularly for this one, it was a nice parcel of land, but there was only one entrance, and you think that's fine. But if you're doing any kind of work on the land, you need to bring in machinery, or you need to bring in a tractor to even just to top or cut a field or cut a trees down. It's coming through your main living area and your main driveway, and it's tearing it up. And as you've seen today, you know, the land is pretty wet. So that didn't work out, and we were a bit downhearted in that. So we're still living in North Wexford and on the beach. So it wasn't hardship. It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
We were in a tiny little house. It was about 70 square meters. So it was small, but it was enjoyable. It was lovely. So I wasn't unhappy to be there. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like we had to get out. And we were looking at other houses, and we did look at a couple of Glebe houses. There was one very nice one down this way that we looked at, but again, it just didn't tick enough boxes for both of us because, you know, we both are moving.
Can I just ask you there, Karen, how did you find the agents in terms of the agents you were dealing with? Do they answer their phone? Was it easy to set up viewings? What was the experience like?
On the whole, actually, it was really good. We ended up looking at a lot of houses with Sherry Fitz Radford down here. At the time, I think it was Sherry Fitz Haythorne Twaite, and he was retiring, and Radford was in New Ross, so he was taking over here in Wexford. And we met some really great estate agents, and very different to Dublin. They don't, you know, in Dublin, you're selling the house. Here, they kind of let you buy the house, you know. It's a much slower process. And there was no push. We didn't find there was a big sell in any of the houses we were going to look at all. They kind of just let you be and make up your own mind, which was nice. You know, we did enjoy that part. So from the auctioneer point of view, there's three or four that would have, you know, we would have used on a number of occasions, gone to see. So we began to know them, and they began to know us. And the auctioneer we bought this house that we're sitting in was actually the one that we had engaged and put our deposit on the other house. So when this came up and we rang him, he said, absolutely, this is the house for you. Because he really knew
what you wanted.
He knew what we wanted. He kind of knew who we were.
Yeah.
He knew where we were coming from. He was, you know, was comfortable with all the figures and everything. So he knew where we could go and where the owner here could go. So that worked out quite well. The other issue I think that's really important when you're looking at a house in the country is boundaries.
Mm.
And your solicitor should be, you know, ours is, we would call him particularly particular about things. There's probably another word for it, but the boundary issues. And so just even looking on the maps and making exactly sure that the boundary, when you walk it, don't just look and say, oh yeah, that's the boundary over there, but go and make sure that you walk every single boundary. And even if there's a small kink, because we have a small kink down there, what side of the kink, you know, the boundary yeah. goes on, it is really, really important, and where gates are.
For sure. Yeah. And one thing I'd say is about country estate agents. If you're going to look at a house that has some acres, like how many acres does this house have?
It's on 9.5.
9.5 acres. Hopefully the selling agent will have got the actual proper land map that goes with the house. It doesn't always happen. Sometimes you end up going sale agreed on a property without having physically seen the map, the boundary map that comes with the house that your solicitor is going to get. But it's a really good idea to get it up front before you make an offer, so that you can walk and you really know that what you're seeing with your eyes corresponds to what you're going to buy with your pocket.
Absolutely, because I suppose every square foot and every square meter, you know, matters, particularly if you're going to put some animals on, you know, grazing is even a small amount can make a big difference to what you can put down. Another thing too, I think, which we did look into, was if you are, you know, you're moving to the country and things grow here, we wanted to see what kind of soil was here. It was a completely barren barley field when we came to see it. The crop had been, was just, it wasn't barren, but the crop was in. But when we bought it, it was completely cut down. So it was just soil, clay and stubble the whole way. So we did have the soil looked at and analyzed.
And who did you use to look at the soil?
Well, I have a friend who does that. So.
Great.
And so we saw what was, and it's been plowed for about 25 years. They can't remember when it was in pasture last. So it's pretty depleted. Mm-hmm. So that would have made an impact on what we were going to do with the place and how we were going to see it. And also the orientation. As we were talking earlier, you know, mm-hmm. we've had floods now in the last little while. Part of the attraction for the land here is that one of the long boundaries of the property is a stream, mm-hmm. and it's quite a size. It's not a river, but it's a good size stream. And we've been flooded twice from very heavy rains here in the last number, particularly in October. And we knew that might be an issue. And we have looked at it, and we did see, you know, just walk the land and make sure where everything might be coming in. It is a floodplain, you can mm-hmm. see, and rivers need floodplains. And if they don't have them, you know, that's what causes even more flooding. So yes, we've been flooded twice this year, which is once in a century, we've been told, but I think it's going to be a much more often now. But we live with it, and we're not too put out with it. Everyone around here has flooding issues. We probably have a little bit more water retention issues than others. So it's all those kind of things, if you are buying acres, to have a really good look and see what the soil is like, what the orientation is like, where the water will drain from, and how you are going to use it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the good things about this, you're on 9.5 acres, and yes, some of the long boundary, as you said, flooded with the stream and the river. But the great thing about the actual siting of the house is that it's up on a height.
Oh.
So the water never came anywhere near the house. And that's always worth considering.
Yeah, I should have started with that. Absolutely. Because, you know, I suppose at the moment my focus is on the outside and not the house. No, Connor had a criteria, and that was a non-negotiable criteria that had to be 30 meters above or above sea level mm-hmm. For the location of the house. And yeah, we are. And there would there's a lovely dip down to the river. So there's no way in our lifetime or the next 10 generations, hopefully, even with the global warming as it's going, that this house would be flooded.
Mm-hmm.
I should have said that. It was definitely a criteria.
And can I ask you, when you and Connor came to see this house, what was your gut response to it?
Oh, okay. This is probably, you know, going to sound very strange, but every house we went to see, those lovely glebe houses and beautiful farmhouses that I fell in love with and loved because they're what I set out to look for. My husband really, you know, would have had to been brought around to, This was the first house in all the houses we've looked at, Breffni, that he liked. He wanted to make an offer the first time we saw it.
Wow.
So I was so struck by that, completely blown away, that it took me back, and I had to sit back for a few days and think, you know, really? So this might actually be the one. And if he really likes it, does that take a lot of pressure off me? And as life goes on and things happen and compromises are made, then his mother passed away. So I think we fell into this house in a funny sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really choose it. It kind of chose us. We came here. He loved it. I didn't dislike it. It has a sort of a... It has a kind of an American feel to it in a little bit of a way. And we have a New Zealand friend who kind of feels a bit, you know, Southern Hemisphere to it. So I didn't dislike it.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that he loved it. So I think in the interests of happy marriage, mm-hmm. we came to an agreement that we could probably, you know, work it out here.
Okay, so the house, I understand, the house wasn't your spiritual match, let's say. But how about the land? Did that give you a lift?
No.
No, yeah, fair enough.
As I said to you, you've seen them all the time, you know, driving around houses plonked in the middle of an open field. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what this was. And again, you know, to go with the dream of the old house, I had in my head, I suppose, these fairy tale ideas of lovely paddocks surrounded by, you know, large trees mm-hmm. and stone walls and that. But sometimes you have to be thankful for unanswered prayers
mm-hmm.
because here with this open barley field, we've had an opportunity to really create something for ourselves and of ourselves for, you know, for future generations, and something just maybe slightly bit different that works for us. So we're putting fencing in, and we're doing a lot of tree planting. We have over 1,000 trees in at the moment. So I wouldn't have been able to do that, you know, if I bought the fairy tale house.
That's really interesting, in that the fairy tale house, let's say the old house, that would already have had its template ideal way of living established, the walled garden, mm-hmm. the orchard, whatever else there would have been. So if you were to have restored it, you'd have been going back to someone else's template, mm-hmm. whereas here you have a blank canvas and you are creating the template. Mm. So for a creative person, which you are, that I hope is an opportunity.
It is an opportunity, but it's a huge challenge and it's enormously tiring, but I am coming to relish that challenge as I see the trees growing and the land changing from the way it was. I think also it is an opportunity to make a little bit, this small, tiny little postage stamp of land, a system. You know, what I would like it mm-hmm. to be is that everything feeds into it, you know, in a very sort of old, natural way, you know, the sheep are grazing down the weeds at the moment.
So come on to the sheep in a minute.
Oh yeah, but it's a whole system, Breffni. So if I had bought the fairy tale, and it would have been an established system. So by almost bringing this 9 acres back to a natural environment, yeah, I think, you know, it's more exciting. It in a way, at the age I am, it's probably a little bit more of a challenge than I had thought we were setting out to do.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, challenges keep you young.
For sure.
So.
Tell me about the black creature that you met one night in your garden that launched a new farming career.
There's so many things that have happened, I suppose, since we spoke last. I suppose it really goes back to about 15 years ago when I started keeping bees. And I teach beginners beekeeping now, and they often say to me, well, why did you get into beekeeping? And I was thinking about this when I was mm-hmm. coming to talk to you. I don't know. I really, really don't know the answer to that. Just something happens and you pick up something and it sticks. And you don't have a really logical answer. You just know that it was meant to be. Well, one morning when we were here about 6 weeks, we woke up and there was this large black brown creature down by the river in the field. And I thought it was a deer and I was all excited. It was a lovely deer, you know. But it turned out to be a very lovely sheep.
A black one.
So there is Warble, they're a breed from Friesland, a and they are the sheep of choice of my neighbor, who turns out to be a retired farmer. His wife and himself have been amazing to us here. And I think if the house wasn't my dream, certainly the community we have fallen into is a blessing beyond anything. You know, they've been extremely lovely, open and welcoming. And we couldn't really ask for better. I left some amazing neighbors in Leinster Road who were just fantastic. And it was lovely to have that community in the city. And we've just, you know, dropped out of heaven into a wonderful community here. And they've just been, we're here a year and I feel like I've probably known them for years. So I'm learning to be a shepherdess from my neighbor.
Isn't that fantastic? Yeah. So as a result of the black sheep on your lawn, you've gone ahead and bought some sheep and built a barn.
We have a barn, we have sheep, we have a lovely ram out there. He's not ours. We have the fencing in, we have the polytunnel in. And yeah, with the drinkers are working and they're just, they're a joy. You look out the window and they're there looking at you. So yeah, we have, it is very much unanswered prayers and I'm very grateful for it. It's, I think what you might hear the hesitation in my voice sometimes is that it is a huge project.
Yeah.
Yes, the house does not need to be roofed. It doesn't need to be rewired. It doesn't need to be replumbed. And we have increased the BER rating. So it's an A3 now, which is probably as good as it's going to get.
And this is 400 square meters of A3 rating. Yeah. That's a lot.
So it's warm and comfortable. Yeah. And Bethany doesn't like her chill. So
no, I'm very cozy here.
So I think all of those things have allowed us to really look at the bigger picture and try to create a lifestyle and an environment that we're comfortable in and something new. And I have moved away from, I do still look at other people's houses, you know, the old Glebe house or something and go, oh, that would be lovely. But I am going to the point where a lovely warm underfloor heating, ceiling to floor.
Bright house. It's a very bright house.
It is. And I'm still learning to be in it. But it is, it's a challenge. And I suppose it's probably a good thing to hit a challenge at 58 and hopefully, you know, see in 4 or 5 years what it looks like and then step back and think, I did that.
But the community has proved a blessing, a huge blessing. Mm. The wandering Yo, who turned you into a sheep farmer and a joint venture with your neighbor across the land.
Yeah, he's teaching me everything I know about sheep, which is very little. We are nothing without those we live with and live beside, without a doubt. And particularly in the country, you know, you need people around you for when things go wrong. And they will do and have already gone wrong. You know, the car doesn't start or the battery is dead or we're flooded or the power has gone out. And all of those things have happened in the year and a bit we've been here. And there's always been someone to call. And, even already, you know, we would know who to call on for that help. And, you know, we've been there. My husband's been there for other people when they need it.
Yes.
Going to get somebody out of a ditch or whatever. So, yes, it is definitely the community. And I think maybe for me, is that what I set out looking for, and I think this often happens, isn't what was right for me.
Aha, yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I think I needed the challenge of something different and something new. And sometimes we fight that and we get really upset and, you know, think it's not what we wanted and we're not getting what we want. But if you step back and really think about all the good things and all the things you can give as opposed to what you haven't got, then I think you're much happier. Mm-hmm. So looking out and thinking, what can I do for here and for the community, bigger community around me, has helped me sort of settle in. So anyhow, Bhavani, so I would like to invite you back for the first week in April for when the sheep will be lambing.
Oh,
so hopefully I'm you'll here. Come back and we can do a lamb podcast.
Oh, I'd love that. Oh, we'll have to have photographs of them.
Absolutely.
They're such beauties.
Well, let's hope they're all successful, but there's got to be some good ones.
Oh, so
please do come and see them.
I'd love to. Yeah. Thanks, Karen.